This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Ruby and Edie have settled themselves in at Frank's, but just when things began to look comfortable, Ruby spotted a familiar, dreaded figure in the street. She and Edie are not as safe as she had thought.
Lou Breaker Watkins was a criminal of the worst sort. Word was he'd spent the war years in and out of jail before Mo picked him up. She had a use for his talents. A rumour had even gone around that he'd once murdered someone, the body never found. Whenever he had turned up at the Rat's Nest, it was because he'd been given a job to do. That was what happened to Winnie Garrick. Winnie had been a skinny 14-year-old with the ferocious look of a wild kitten in her eyes. A runaway from a girl's home, a cocky, dirty-mouthed, cigarette-smoking thief with towy hair that she'd patchily dyed with peroxide. Lipstick and rouge made her look like the painted child she was. She already knew what she had to sell. Whatever Winnie's misdemeanour, Mo had decided she needed to be taught some manners, and she sent Breaker to do it. Ruby had been glad Edie had already left for school the next morning when Winnie limped back, hardly seeing out of her swollen, blue and bloodied face, arms and legs bruised black, and blood running down her legs. Winnie did nothing but curl on her bed without eating or drinking for days, bleeding. The girls who shared a room with her said she'd even pissed herself. Mo had told Ruby to mind her own business.
No one ever earned money getting mollycoddled. Leave her to me.
Winnie had disappeared after that.
What is it, Mum?
Edie's voice reached her. When Ruby looked again, Lou Breaker Watkins had gone. If it was him, he was short enough to disappear in a crowd. She circulated her tongue around her dry gums.
Mum?
Sudden headache, that's all. Come on. She wanted to be wrong. Thousands of men must have that gait, those mannerisms. What if it was some jockey having a day in town, some half-grown country lad? It had to be someone else. Had to be. As they walked, Edie chatted again. Her new friends, the ones she'd decided not to like, who wore what the others had for lunch, and how she compared herself to everyone else.
Can I have a blue ribbon for my hair?
Ruby shied at the flap of someone's overcoat, a glimpse of a hat on a short man's head. Even a cigarette butt, flicked to the gutter, sent alarm through the cells of her body.
Can I? Sky blue, not dark blue, Edie went on.
Please, just stop talking, Ruby said, forcing herself to take one step after another. Faster, faster.
Why are we rushing? Said Edie.
Do you want time to choose things or not?
Yes.
Well, keep up. At Mackenzie's, Ruby glanced around nervously as she fingered gloves and cardboard tubes of scented talc and tried to keep Edie from touching things. It was a relief to slip into a shop, browsing items with other ladies. If she wasn't so penny-pinched, she'd have gone to Roscoe's. There was a moment of temptation over a pair of modern plastic earrings, and she bought a 9-penny set of coloured hankies printed with daisies. It was hard not to look over her shoulder to see if she'd been followed. If it had been Breaker Watkins, there was a chance he wouldn't recognise her with her hair cut off. Besides, in Mackenzie's, he'd stand out like a dog in a chook house. As Edie left her side to approach a shop steward, Ruby's insides lurched with the old panic.
"My mother wants to buy,"
Edie was saying, smiling and beckoning Ruby with one arm, pointing at a display of cardboard cases with the other. Ruby watched her girl cross the assembly ground, her hair nicely parted and ribboned, new white socks to her knees, carrying her new, blue leatherette cardboard case. New shoes would have to wait for a few more paydays. Her toes wouldn't pinch much more before then.
"Our Edie's got nothing to worry about,"
Douglas said as he started the car.
"Our Edie? What the hell gives you the right?"
"I say, that's not called for. What's got into you?"
"Nothing. I'm a bit tired, that's all."
"Not exactly a good omen for a marriage," he said,
waiting for a stream of cyclists to pass before heading to the main road.
"Marriage? Do you mean Frank's agreed?"
"He did."
Douglas was grinning. She leaned back in the seat and let herself smile as he drove. He nodded.
"Just as well you have no expectations."
"What does that mean?"
"Well, you've rather got a tendency to be a tad too, shall we say, mercurial, for a chap to be properly married to."
"Are you trying to say that I'm a bitch?"
Douglas emitted a short shriek, and the Morris jolted.
"Steady on. I didn't say..."
"Well, that's bloody lovely, isn't it?" she said.
"Dash it. I mean, you're not going to go on being irascible like that, are you? I'm pretty sure you must have had a rough time of it. But you do rather seem to insist on getting hold of the wrong end of things. Frank's bad enough. I'm not sure I can stand the pair of you flying off the handle at the least thing."
"Well, that's putting it plainly."
Ruby looked at the other cars as they passed. He was right. If she didn't take hold of her nerves, she could ruin everything.
"Look, truth is, I'm becoming rather fond of you."
He turned slowly down the little lane towards the back of Vado.
"And I'm fond of Edie too. Please, bear with me. I'm trying to say, when we're all together, couldn't we say she's our Edie without you getting het up like that? After all, for all intents and purposes, we will appear to be married. It was your idea. If we're in this together, then we have to be able to sort these trifles out, don't you think? Frank can be her uncle, and I'm practically her stepfather."
"I suppose you're right," she said. "When is this likely to happen?"
"The wedding. There are a few things to go over first."
"Yes."
"Where shall I pick you up?"
This time he didn't get out to open the door for her.
"The library corner again."
She gave him a brief smile.
"Thanks, and I'm sorry about being ratty. There are things on my mind."
"No doubt," he said dryly. "You've been in some sort of mood. It doesn't do anybody any good at all."
He meant Frank, didn't he? It doesn't do Frank any good. She'd better snap out of it.
"I can be there at 4 if you like,"
Douglas said. "Thanks. Yes."
From the little porch, a thin curlicue of smoke wafted up from Madame Sobrany. Her dark eyes followed Douglas as he completed a 3-point turn.
So, Madam stubbed out her cigarette.
That's Ruby's Mr. Woods, Janice said, swinging her bag. He's lovely, but a bit of a dill.
Janice, Douglas is the one who helped us get the new place, Ruby told Madam. Housekeeping for Mr. Pierce.
You're going to tell me everything, aren't you? Said Janice.
Janice, you have to work, said Madam. Ruby, take off your coat and come with me.
In the salon, Madam held up a leather-bound notebook.
In this, I make notes. A wedding, the bride, her mother, all parties. Measurements, the model of the hat, all. And funerals. Here we have a widow.
Ruby looked around at the hats on display.
Yes, there are three black hats here.
Madam had read her thoughts.
Why did they not buy one of these? Are Vardo hats cream cakes that people see and buy? People can buy a hat anywhere. Even that place, Roscoe's, sells hats. Bah! Vardo people have money. To buy my time, my understanding of their needs.
Understanding needs? Ruby knew about that.
What is a hat for?
Madam gestured expansively.
Look out at the street.
A couple of middle-aged women paused to look in the window and passed on.
A hat is proper for a lady.
Madam lifted a hat, then replaced it on its stand.
These hats are not the hats people need. A hat is a language. It is unfortunate for those two. Concerning hats, they are illiterate. They keep their hats for hens to roost in. Bah!
Ruby's chest quivered with a silent giggle. Madam floated her way around the floor, picking hats off their stands with somber tenderness, and replacing them at just the right angle.
A hat is a language of illusion, she crooned. Theatre. These things I understand. A woman wants to appear beautiful. She chooses a certain hat. She is unhappy. A certain hat makes her think she can fool the world, to believe she is.
Lost for the word, Madam circled her hands in the air and gave the wide-eyed, dazzling stage smile of an actress.
For such a woman, the hat must be magical. She needs not the hat itself. She needs a hat to make people believe she is a radiant lady, full of life. The client does not tell me these things. I see it. I make notes. Do you understand me?
Yes. Ruby knew about making people believe in radiance and dazzle. Dancing with a wide smile all night when her feet burned, because it had been her job. Even when some sweat-drenched oaf had crushed her toes and ruined her shoes. Mustering dazzle was necessary to make a living in the brutal commerce of sexual congress, when your whole body hurt so deeply that your soul itself felt chipped and cracked.
My dear, Madam's hand was warm. You have a shaking. Are you ill?
No, I'm all right.
You are at a most interesting age.
Madam patted Ruby's cheek.
You fly. No, you hover. Between beauty and the maturity. Between romantic ideas and the opposing experience. This is the best age of all. So go. Put water on your face and dry those tears. Put on lipstick, then come back. I have not finished.
At the porcelain basin, Ruby ran wet hands through her cropped hair. It burned her to think Madam's astuteness might uncover her. With red lipstick on her mouth, she felt better. She lifted her ribs and returned to the salon. Madam held up a hat, brimless, rust brown, the crown folded to a creased slant.
"When you are out, you will wear this," she said. "It will do. Trim it if you like, in your own time."
She put it into a hat box and covered it with tissue.
"And that lipstick is not the right color for you. Never mind that now."
It was last year's model, but still.
"Thank you," Ruby said.
"We will pay attention to the business of the widow who wants a hat," said Madame crisply. "This widow is not old. She is one who does not grieve. She plays a part. For her, it is important to appear beautiful. You see? For the next husband."
"Oh, when does it have to be ready?" Ruby asked.
"That is not a question. The husband is not yet dead. We have, perhaps, 4 days.
"So you want me to finish it? What else?"
"Your work is on your tray upstairs. I am going out. Brush your skirt. Is that a hair from a cat? Remove it. When you hear the bell, stop your work at once. Remove your smock and come down."
"What shall I do if a lady wishes to buy a hat?
Sell her a hat. Prices are under each stand. If they want to see me, look in the book. Make an appointment. Give them my card. I will be back before 10 o'clock.
From the upstairs window, Ruby saw the MG disappear down the lane. Lifting the dust cloth, she expected to see a nearly decorated hat pinned for her to finish. Instead, there was one black, bare felt body with a shallow crown and flared, in vogue, roll-edged brim. Beside it was a part roll of black spotted Swiss netting, a card of velvet ribbon and a bottle of black beads. Ruby lifted the lid of a box of feathers. There was no note. Janice must have been listening for her.
"Madam's just picking up a couple of blocks for the new designs. She won't be long. Here's a tip. Don't use the feathers. She's off feathers for now."
Before Ruby could ask anything, the blocking room door closed. She slipped her hand under the netting that might make a veil over the face. As a three-quarter veil, it could be gathered up over the flare in a coquettish swag toward the crown and stitched into a large, loose bow, or made into a horizontal cockade of peaked, stiffened, raw edges, radiating out to the edge of the brim. Gently, she gathered the netting, seeing it ruched and stitched, giving a sumptuous effect, softening the frame around the face. Or would that look old-fashioned and frou-frou? She picked up a coil of velvet-covered wire and looped it with a little netting around her fingers, unsure. The ribbon with the velvet flock dots could add a touch of flamboyance, or would that overdo it? Frank would probably know. Simplicity of style would probably meet with Madame's approval. She took a breath and started work. By Friday, the hat for the soon-to-be widow was finished. The next job was trimming a new model for the mayor's wife. For the last few days, Janice had been away at lunchtime, and there'd seemed no point in stopping for lunch. The more work Ruby took on, the better she was able to force her mind away from Breaker Watkins and the thoughts that plagued her. She pierced the fine needle into the fibres of the piece of satin in her hand. Before pulling the thread through, she paused and looked out the window and the curtain of clouds moving across the sky. The weight of her old life, the necessity of closing herself off from herself so she could endure it, might have shut her off from Edie too. The cost of it had not occurred to her before, and it pressed heavily on her. Why now? She finished the stitch and gazed out the window again. The love she had for Edie was like the colour of the sky, beyond thought. It was there, even when it couldn't be seen, even when she had to turn herself away from it. She was tempted to drop the work immediately and run all the way to the school, just to scoop her into her arms.
Oh, Ruby, I have missed you.
Janice licked her finger and dabbed crumbs of caraway seed cake off the greaseproof paper at morning tea time.
Divine! There's something lemony in it, isn't there?
Glad you like it, said Ruby. She had missed Janice too.
Frank must think he's struck it lucky with you doing for him.
I don't know about that. Janice gulped her tea noisily, and the cup grated on the saucer when she put it down.
I feel awful, not inviting you to lunch, though. I've been meeting an old school chum up at the Roscoe's tea rooms. But with Madam needing you here...
It's all right, said Ruby. I had a lot to get through.
But I do think, whispered Janice, brushing crumbs off her smock. It's rotten that Edie isn't allowed to just come here in the afternoons. Why don't you let her walk this far and meet her downstairs?
Shaking her head, Ruby said, I'll take the tea things down. When she returned, Janice had returned to the blocking room, and Madam was holding the soon-to-be widow's hat up above eye level.
No, 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 no!
Her mouth turned down as she flicked at the felt and tulle cockade with the back of her hand.
Take this off!
Ruby pressed her lips together and closed her eyes. The idea had come from a magazine.
Your mind is not here,
Madam was curt.
Take care unpicking your stitches. That tulle is not cheap. It must not be damaged. Put it away. For now, there is a box of linings waiting next to the machine. Do those.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.